Great, Trevor. Thanks. Good morning, everyone. Just at the outset, I'd say I think the GE team had a really great quarter. Our environment continues to improve. Media buying was strong. Rail loadings were positive. Revenue passenger miles were positive. Losses have declined, and credit demand's up, and equipment orders were positive. But we're still cautious in a few areas. We're working through a difficult commercial real estate cycle. You know, after many quarters of decline, demand for electricity finally rebounded in the second quarter, and we think that's encouraging. As many people have written, you know, we think this is a multi-speed recovery, so it's going to the economy is going to strengthen at different paces around the world. Earnings growth resumes. We're excited about that. EPS is up 15%. I think everyone likes what they see in GE Capital. The losses have peaked, and earnings are rebounding, and we had strong performances at NBCU, healthcare, consumer, and energy. The GE team's execution was very strong. Increased margins. We're on track for $13 to $15 billion of full-year cash flow from operating activities, and we had $74 billion of cash on the balance sheet at the end of the quarter. That gives us many positive capital allocation options ahead, and I would say, if anything, those options strengthened during the quarter, given our strong cash performance. So I'm very pleased with the way we executed in the second quarter. I always go through four operational kind of updates on the company in general. The first one is with GE Capital. Really same as in the past. All the metrics are improving. I think the one I would point out on this page is the Tier 1 common ratio at 8.1%. Despite FX having an impact on equity, we think that's very positive. And as the GE Capital earnings improve, that's only going to accelerate. And E&I, we're making progress. We announced the sale of Bach yesterday, and we're well on our way towards the commitments we made on ending that investment. So we have very strong liquidity and very strong capital positions, and those got better in the second quarter. The second thing is how our commercial teams are performing, particularly in orders. This is our first quarterly orders growth since the third quarter of 2008. Energy had 20% equipment growth, tech 14%. Service had many bright spots compared to some one-timers last year, like nuclear fuels. And the backlog is steady. It's up 12% quarter over quarter, and pretty broad-based strength. And so I think we feel good about where we stand. The backlog really is flat ex FX. And, you know, we expect single-digit orders growth in the second half of the year. These are always tough to predict given the lumpy nature. But, when we look at our funnels, that's what we see looking outward. The third area is an operational improvement. We expanded margins in the second quarter. We had good performance overall, 70 basis points performance to 17.1%, which is, I think everyone would agree, I think good execution by GE. Positive margins really driven by a positive value gap from a price and deflation standpoint. And we've done aggressive restructuring over the past two or three years, and that cost those cost savings are showing up in the bottom line, and we think that's great. We've done that while investing heavily in research and development, a significant increase of 14% year to date. We've targeted to introduce 30% more products this year. We're funding adjacencies in areas like batteries and areas like that, and we're growing our global position. We really have a deep pipeline of leadership products. Like the GNX and aviation, and falling behind that is the TechX and the LeapX, so we're filling out the product line. We're launching two new gas turbines in the second half of the year, multiple new healthcare, both from an information standpoint, information technology, and also diagnostic imaging devices, increasing our locomotive advantage, launching smart appliances. So we really do have a deep pipeline, and so we're investing in organic growth while growing margin rates, and we think that's a good sign for investors. Lastly, good operational improvement in cash, solid cash flow in the second quarter, $6.3 billion year to date. Our CFOA advanced ahead of net income and depreciation. And again, in general, while we're seeing progress decline, our working capital is offsetting that, and so that's kind of the tail of the tape so far this year. We have a very strong balance sheet with consolidated cash of $74 billion. You go down the walk, you see lots of free cash flow, which is a big part of the GE business model. It's just lots of cash available for capital allocation as we look at the year. So we continue to build the cash balance. We're on track for CFOA for the year, and I think the cash story and the balance sheet strengthening story is a very positive story for GE and our investors. So with that, let me turn it over to Keith, and he'll go through the operations.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm going to start with the summary of the second quarter. For the quarter, we had continuing operations revenues of $37.4 billion, which were down 4%. See the pieces, industrial sales of 24.4 were down 6, and that's right in line with our expectations. If you go back to the second and third quarters of last year, we estimated that our equipment revenues could be down 10 to 15% in 2010 based on the orders profile we were seeing. In December, we updated that to say that we thought equipment revenue could be down 5 to 10 this year, and through the first half, the equipment revenues are down 8, so that's right in line with what we had as expectations. Financial services revenue of $13.1 billion, down 2%. I'll show you more of that on the G Capital page. We earned $3.3 billion of net income, which is up 14%. And for earnings per share, we earned 30 cents, as Jeff said, which includes the cost of the preferred dividend, and the EPS results are up 15%. As Jeff covered, the total cash flow from operating activities was $6.3 billion year-to-date, which puts us right on track for our total year estimate. And for taxes, the consolidated tax rate for the second quarter is 21%. That's up from 7% in the second quarter of 2009, mainly because of the improvement in highly taxed pre-tax earnings, principally at GE Capital. GE tax rate's in line with 2009, and as you look at the rest of the year, we expect the GE rate for the full year to be somewhere in the mid-20s, a bit lower than we had in the second quarter due to the income mix between GE and GE Capital and some possible second-half audit resolutions that we've talked about. On the right side, one final point, the total JECS tax benefit, I say on the chart that it's a lower benefit. The total benefit in Q2 was $570 million lower than last year's Q2. On the right side are the segment results. You can see our industrial businesses, X Media, had $3.6 billion of segment profit, which was down 2% from last year. NBC Universal had both revenue and profit growth, and G Capital earned $830 million, up 93%. Overall, segment profit was up 8%, and with lower restructuring at the corporate level, partially offset by higher interest, the total earnings were up 14%. So it's great to be back delivering strong earnings growth. You know, before I cover the business highlights, here's a summary of the second quarter items that impacted our results. And as you can see, there were very few items to break out this quarter. First, as we've continued to report, we had a total impact of 1 cent from restructuring and other charges. We continue to reduce our lighting cost structure. We had some restructuring in water, healthcare, and global banking. We had two gains in the quarter. We sold a portion of our CFM engine teardown business to SNECMA, and we realized a $77 million after-tax gain on that. And we had an environmental insurance settlement that occurred in the quarter for a $75 million after-tax gain. So the restructuring offsets the gains. And we also booked $186 million of additional reserves for our gray zone liability in Japan. And I've got a lot more on that on the next page. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on gray zone. Our Japanese consumer business is in runoff and discontinued operations. We sold the business to Shinsei in September of 2008. And as you can see on the top left-hand corner of this chart, at the time of the deal, we started with $2.2 billion of coverage for future claims through the Shinsei loss share agreement. Through the first quarter of 2010, we had booked another $500 million of additional reserves that related to both the tougher economy in Japan as well as the legislative and regulatory changes that were occurring in the country and affecting the gray zone claims. And as you can see from the chart on the upper right, we continue to see the claims decline. That's average daily claims on top and then the exposure per claim on the bottom. But the claim trends haven't come down as quickly as we anticipated, and because of that, we booked an additional $186 million in reserves this quarter. In total, we've settled $2.2 billion of claims to date, and we have an additional $700 million of reserves on the books today. So I want to go through a couple of facts about our book in Japan and the dynamics of our portfolio. First, our liability relates to a closed runoff book. We stopped all new lending as of October 2008. We capped the interest rates for all the accounts by June of 2009 at the 18% level. The existing balances that we have amortized off by the middle of 2013, so they're all in a runoff, in a sort of a term loan runoff. Shinsei is responsible for all credit losses, so a bankruptcy event is a credit loss, and GE retains the gray zone liability, which is the amount above the 18% interest, generally up to around 28%. And finally, 95% of our remaining customers are current on their existing loans. So this is a runoff book with current payments by the vast majority of the customers. So When you put those dynamics together, the current loss estimate we booked to has a few assumptions, and I've oversimplified this model, but here's the way we have modeled this so far. The rate of new claims continues to decline. For instance, from March to June, our total claims have come down by 9% a month, and in our model, we project the claims to come down on average 11% a month over the next year. June's average daily claims came in 14% below May, so that's ahead of what the assumptions are in our model, but it's one data point. With that rate of claims reductions, basically the model assumes the number of claims by the time you get to 2012 become de minimis, and the average exposure per claim remains consistent with the May levels, and we see the impact from the loss mitigation efforts that are in place. So those assumptions support the $700 million of current reserves. Now, the tougher part here is, you know, pegging behavior as we get out into 11 and 12, and we know that the more time that people are paid up, the balances are paid off, the less likely they are to claim. There are also a lot of uncertainties. There's the new government lending restrictions that went into place in June. We have not seen an impact from those yet. There's the state of the economy. So there are a lot of variables here. But if you just want to run a sensitivity, and I think this is one that may size this for people, as an example, if the claims continue to run down at only 3% a month, which is consistent with the average since we sold the business. So if you go back to the end when we sold the business this year and say the claims have come down on average 3% a month, but that's significantly below the recent pace of deceleration, as you can see on the chart. But just use that as an assumption. That means the tail would extend out another 5 years, even though in the middle of 2013 all the accounts that we have balances on will have matured and should have been paid down. So if you run the tail out through 5 years and you keep the loss exposure at current levels, this set of assumptions would result in about four times the incremental claims that we've modeled in our estimates today and about $1.2 billion of incremental financial exposure. So on the other hand, you know, we've added a lot of resources to this effort over the last 6 months. If we can execute to some of the best practices that we learned from some others in Japan, we could impact the existing $700 million reserve favorably by $50 to $75 million. So there's a very dynamic situation here. We're going to continue to give you quarterly updates on what's happening, but at the end of the day, we believe the ultimate exposure here is very manageable for GE. So with that, let me jump into the businesses. I'm going to start with GE Capital. Mike Neal and the team had a great quarter. We believe this is the start of a longer-term trend of positive earnings momentum. Revenue at $12.3 billion was down 3%, driven by the lower assets. A real positive in the quarter was the significant improvement they had in earnings quality, with pre-tax earnings of $741 million. A net income of $830 million was up 93%. That's driven by lower credit costs, it's driven by better margins, and it's partially offset by some higher real estate impairments. Our $487 billion of ending net investment is well ahead of plan. Even if you exclude the impact of the stronger dollar, which if you go back to the chart Jeff showed you on the ENI walk, we're at year-end target of $500 billion. So we're already at the year-end target of $500. We're well on the way to our $440 billion in 2012, and that gives us lots of flexibility on originations, on funding, and on M&A going forward. We had a strong volume quarter with good margins. Total commercial volume of $10.3 billion was up 24%. I'll cover some more on that in a minute. We had $2.8 billion of losses and impairments, which are down $500 million from Q1, mostly driven by lower consumer losses as our book continues to improve, and I'll cover more on that as well. The unrealized loss estimate in commercial real estate is down to $6.3 billion from approximately $7 billion at year-end. And on lower receivables, our reserve coverage at 2.66%, an all-time high. The team continued to do a good job on costs. As Jeff said, we announced the Bach disposition, which is going to give us some more any flexibility, about $8 billion when it closes, which we would expect probably in the fourth quarter. And based on our first half pre-tax results, it seems that there shouldn't be any need for a contribution from GE to GE Capital under the income maintenance agreement. That's what IMA stands for. So, you know, really a great quarter. Let me do a few highlights by business that are down on the left side if you look. Consumer had a very strong quarter. They earned $735 million. That's $484 million more than last year's Q2. The earnings growth came from over $400 million of lower credit losses and $100 million of lower costs. Our U.S. retail finance business earned $393 million, which was up over 100%. And again, that's driven by portfolio quality improvements and better margins. Our global banking business earned $293 million, up 13%, also driven by lower credit costs. And UK Home Lending earned $39 million in the quarter, and I'll cover more on that portfolio in a few pages. In our commercial real estate business, remained the one tough area in GE Capital, as we expected. The business lost $524 million net, driven by $280 million of after-tax credit losses on our debt portfolio. In the quarter, we saw a 3% decline in asset values for the properties where we booked those loss reserves. So the valuation declines have definitely slowed, and they appear to be less than what we anticipated as we went into the year, and that's good news. We also had $287 million of after-tax marks and impairments on our equity book. I'd say there are some positives in real estate. I mentioned the unrealized losses down. We've continued to shrink the portfolio. Assets are down from operations over $3.5 billion from the first quarter. Delinquency dollars are flat from Q1 to Q2, and non-earning assets were down $130 million from Q1 to Q2. So we also had a few property sales. We sold about $400 million in the quarter. However, you know, while there is some market commentary that things are getting more positive in commercial real estate, we still expect the real estate book to remain under pressure for the near future. Commercial lending and leasing business also had a good quarter. Earnings of $312 million were up 28%. We had over $200 million of lower losses and better margins, which more than offset the tough comparisons from the 2Q09 Genpact gain. GECAS also had another great quarter. Earnings of $288 million were basically flat, as higher core income offset about $30 million of higher impairments. And Energy Financial Services also had a great quarter, driven by core income growth and a gain from the sale of our Regency General Partnership position. So overall, a great quarter as GE Capital turns around here. Next, I wanted to cover an update on financial regulatory reform. I know everybody knows there's still a ton of work to do to finalize the legislation. So the outcome right here is this is what we expect based on what we know today. And what we know today, we think the impact's going to be manageable. And I thought I'd just cover some of the pieces. First and foremost, the good news is the GE business model's intact. We can continue to own GE Capital, and the financial supervision will be focused on GE Capital. We'll continue to be able to finance GE product sales on market terms and at arm's length, as we've been doing, so that doesn't change. We will retain ownership of our banks, the ILC and the FSB in Utah. Second, as we look at capital requirements, we think they should be within our GE Capital earnings growth and asset reduction plans. You saw our Tier 1 went up even in the quarter, even with an impact from FX on equity. As we continue to shrink the book and reduce our leverage, we feel confident that we're going to be able to meet whatever the requirements are to be well capitalized. Third, we do expect the Fed will be our regulator. The transition is supposed to occur in the 12 to 18 months after the legislation's enacted. And as we've said, we've been preparing for this for more than a year with the help of outside third parties. Fourth, we need to see the final regulatory rules surrounding the Volcker Rule. However, we believe that, you know, the impact on GE Capital is not going to be significant. We have about $1.8 billion investment in private equity-sponsored funds, and those are either going to run off or reach levels that are less than our 3% of Tier 1 capital in the 4- to 12-year phase-in that's contemplated in the legislation that we have out there. Fifth, we've already lowered our late fees on our U.S. private label credit card business, and we're not a big interchange player, so I think that's going to have a small impact on us. And finally, proposals on derivatives will require us to post collateral going forward like everyone else, but the book is grandfathered. It will be on a going-forward basis, and we can just use some of the cash that we were already carrying for that, and we don't see any impact from holding 5% of securitizations. Basically, securitizations are already on book, and we hold 5% in a different form today, so that's not going to have an impact. So a lot of work, obviously, still to be finalized, but that summarizes the impact that we see today. On portfolio quality, things continue to improve. I'll start with equipment on the left side. Our 30-day past due delinquencies are better. They're down 21 basis points, and that's pretty broad. Americas were down 24, Europe was down 47, and Asia was down 11. The total commercial non-earnings are down about $500 million in the second quarter versus the first quarter, which is good news. And it's down 6 basis points to 2.99%. You can see that in the supplementals that we put out with the earnings press release. But the equipment, which is a subset of commercial non-earnings, are up over $100 million. It's up about 21 basis points to 3.07, as you can see here, the non-earnings. And that's driven by one account. We had one large account that went into non-earning, even though it's still paying current. On the bottom, you can see real estate delinquencies are up. We expect them to continue to be up, but the real estate non-earning dollars went down $130 million from Q1 to Q2. And on the right side, on the consumer, you can see delinquencies are down 6 basis points in total, and it's a split story as it has been. The non-mortgage is down 42 basis points, driven by our North American retail book. That's down 87 basis points as the underwriting actions that we took continue to lead to better results. We've had four consecutive quarters of declining delinquency there, and that is very positive. On the mortgage book, you can see delinquencies are up 71 basis points. It's principally driven by Australia, where the delinquency dollars are flat, but the percents went up because of the book runoff. We had a similar phenomenon in the UK home lending book. Those trends are the same for non-earning assets. Overall, consumer non-earning assets are down $500 million from the first quarter. And finally, in the UK home lending book, you know, we're down to 956 houses in the real estate we own at the end of the quarter. That's our lowest level since the second quarter of 2008, and we realized 117% of our carrying value for the houses that we sold in the quarter. So the improvements that we're seeing in delinquencies and non-earning assets are going to lead to lower losses as we go forward. Next is an update on reserve coverage. Reserves ended the quarter at $9.1 billion, and coverage increased above our historic high mark to 2.66%. And we do have lower reserves. You can see it went from 9.5 to 9.1, but we did not release reserves into income. I don't know how to get any clearer on that. We tried to highlight it in the box at the top of the page. In the second quarter, we had $2.2 billion of write-offs, which resulted in lower assets. When we have a write-off, we actually remove the receivable from the books. It's a balance sheet event, and it's not a release to income. It's actually removing a delinquent or non-earning asset. And we added $2 billion in new provisions, and the amount of new provisions we add is based on two things, really. One, the book is smaller, so you're going to have less provisions because you have less assets that you're providing against. And two, the improving asset quality. And then finally, we also had an impact of $200 million from the stronger dollar at the end of Q2 versus Q1. So you can see the split of the reserves. We increased our commercial reserves by $200 million in the quarter, principally the real estate loans, where I said we added some reserves. We're up to $1.8 billion of reserves in real estate, and 73% of our impaired loans are paying current. So we're marking basically a lot of the loan book to market. It's roughly when you're at 100% LTV on the loan book, you deal with the volatility on a quarterly basis. But with a lot of the customers paying current, you know, we think we're going to do better than some of these reserves that we've put up. And then finally, across the rest of the commercial book, obviously our secured lending positions are very important in minimizing the losses given default, and we feel good about that. On the consumer, reserves are down $600 million. Assets are down $12 billion. They're down 7% quarter over quarter. Delinquencies are down over $1 billion, and most of the FX impact that I talked about was in consumer. One final thing here, it's the non-earning numbers aren't on the page. The coverage went up, but the non-earning pages are in the supplemental schedule, and non-earning assets are down in total $1 billion from Q1 to Q2, which is also a positive. So if you look at the quarter, we increased the commercial reserves again. Our overall coverage and our non-earnings coverage are both up in the quarter. And I'll wrap up G Capital with a few comments on volume and our outlook. Originations continue to get better. I think we're in a differentiated space here. We're playing in the mid-market. We've got a green light on our mid-market and small and medium enterprise originations. And the total on-book volume was up 22% versus the prior quarter to $40 billion. So the teams are growing their volume in the quarter. And year over year, it's up positively. Our commercial lending and leasing business, which is right over the target of mid-market and small and medium enterprise, pipeline for future business continues to grow. It went from $33 to $37 billion. That's a combination of proposals, active credit reviews on a specific amounts that customers want, and things that are in the backlog. So that's a positive. The core U.S. mid-market business was $5.7 billion in the quarter. That's up 75% over Q1, so these indicators are delivering real volume on the books. And the retail finance volume was up strongly year over year, and the returns remain high. We're getting good returns on our book. In the quarter, margins were up overall in G Capital. You know, we're up to 5% about in the first quarter, up around 5.3% in the second quarter. So, you know, things are really turning here, and the volume picture feels pretty good. On the right side is the outlook that Mike Neal covered in June. You can see we expect more of the same that we saw in Q2 for the second half. We'll continue to have revenue down as we're ahead of our shrinkage on the any plan. Margins are good, losses and expenses are good, and the pre-tax and the earnings are definitely better. So if you want to do it by business, if you look at the bottom right, it's the earnings outlook for the second quarter. versus second half of 2010 versus what we had in 2009. And overall, everything in G Capital feels like it's getting better, and that's good news. Next, I'll move to industrial. I'm going to start with NBC Universal. Jeff Zucker and the team delivered a strong performance in the quarter. Revenues at $3.7 billion were up 5%. Segment profit of $607 million was up 13%. It's really a straightforward quarter. We had continued leadership by our cable properties. Cable revenue at $1.2 billion was up 7%. Segment profit was up 10%, again led by entertainment. Saw continued strength at USA and Bravo and Oxygen. Had a good performance at CNBC. Profit was up 9%. You know, in broadcast, we had a pretty good quarter. Revenues of $1.4 billion were up 1%, and segment profit was up 6%. We saw continued strength in the ad markets. The scatter was up over 20% in the second quarter. The local stations market continues to be very strong. In the second quarter, local stations were up 25% after being up 15% in the first quarter. You know, their ratings are down in the summer for all the networks, but we are off to a pretty good start. We've got the number one show with America's Got Talent. The development that we've invested in was well-received, and probably one of the biggest highlights in the quarter was the upfront. In total, NBCU was up about 18% in dollars booked. About half of that was from higher sellout, and about half of that was better pricing. And Leno returned, as you know, and he's maintained a 23% margin over the alternatives in the demo, so that feels pretty good. Film and Parks also had a positive quarter. Revenue was up 6%. Segment profit was up over $40 million. The film business had a better performance at the box office with Get 'Em to the Greek, and we had a fantastic start to our automated film Despicable Me at the start of the third quarter. And the parks had single-digit increases in both attendance and per cap fee spending. Segment profit was down slightly in the quarter from our marketing spend for the opening of Harry Potter World in Orlando and the King Kong 360 3D in Hollywood, and both of those are off to fantastic starts. The regulatory review is progressing as expected. We were happy to receive EU approval this week for the Comcast-NBCU joint venture. And Hulu and NBC continue to have, CNBC.com continue to have very strong growth in the quarter. So overall, pretty solid quarter for NBC Universal. Next is technology infrastructure. John Rice and the team delivered a second quarter in line with our expectations, given their environment. Which was challenging. Revenues of $9 billion were down 6%, and segment profit of $1.6 billion was down 11%. And if you go business by business, I'll start with aviation. Second quarter orders of $3.9 billion were down 6% year-over-year. We continued to have major equipment orders down. We had $1.6 billion of major equipment orders. That was down about 8%. We had $920 million of commercial engine orders, $200 million of military orders. Military orders were down about 13%. The backlog ended the quarter at $19.2 billion, which is down about 3% from the quarter. Service orders were down 5%. Commercial spare parts orders were 20.3 million per day, which was reported down 7%. But if you adjust for the 2009 ABL order, that'd be down about 2%. Revenues of $4.3 billion were down 8%, reflecting the impact of the lower new engine shipments. We were down about 4%. And lower spare parts sales, which was down about 11%, principally from fewer overhauls. We had about 80 fewer overhauls during the quarter. We've seen airlines defer overhauls, and we also saw a decrease in the scope of overhauls and repairs that came through our shops, driven by the airlines preserving cash. We had some impact, I think, a little bit of a delay because of the ash impact in Europe in the beginning of the quarter. Overall segment profit of $879 was down about 5%. Primarily driven by the lower volume on engines and services, as I said, partially offset by the gain that I covered on the quarterly items page. And we also had a positive value gap in the quarter, price a positive with deflation. So if you normalize the op profit for aviation, I think for the first half, we've had deals in this year and deals that didn't repeat from last year. If you normalize the op profit, excluding the deal transactions in both years, aviation op profit would be down about 10%. Driven by the volume pressure and overhauls and lower commercial unit shipments. Healthcare had had another strong quarter. It's a nice turnaround here. Orders of $4.3 billion were up 6%. Equipment orders were up 9%. But it saw a pretty strong market. Global diagnostic imaging orders were up 13% with broad participation. The U.S. was up 5%. China was up 38%. India was up 77%. The Asia-Pacific region, including Japan, was up 21%. MR was very strong with orders up 27%, driven by our new Optima 1.5T wideboard product, which was well-received in the market. Service orders were up 2%. And in the quarter, revenue of $4.1 billion was up 3%, driven by equipment up 6% and flat services. And the segment profit of $661 was up 12%, driven by the higher volume and the benefits from last year's restructuring. Transportation continues to be impacted by just a tough operating environment, although there's some signs of improvement for the future. The first one that we talked about were the orders of $1.2 billion in the quarter. They're up 84%. We had $660 million of equipment orders, which is up 400%, including a 200-unit North American order, so that's a positive sign. We also saw some strength in the off-highway vehicle orders. We had $114 million of orders in the quarter, which were up 150%. For operations, revenues of $700 million in the quarter were down 34%. Really two factors. We had 30% fewer locomotive shipments. We had 80 locomotives this quarter versus 119 last year in the quarter. And we had 37% lower services, reflecting the impact of the park locomotives that we've talked about. So segment profit of $26 million was driven by the lower volume in equipment and services. Another positive here, I'd say, is that the customer operating environment is continuing to improve. Q2 volume was up 18% for the railroads. Park locomotives, which are still a drag in services, have improved, though. They went from 4,000 to 3,000 in the quarter, and that should begin to help our service business going forward. Next is energy. John Kornicki and the energy team delivered another solid quarter. Despite the lower volume, our revenues of $9.5 billion were down 9%, but we had good operating leverage with segment profit of $1.9 billion, up 3%. And both energy and oil and gas had similar quarterly profiles, as you see on the bottom left. If you look at energy, orders of $8 billion were up 8% in the quarter. Equipment orders of $3.7 billion were up 19%. This is just a great quarter on orders here. We had thermal orders of $1.7 billion. That's up 45%. In the first quarter, we talked about the Iraq order that was going to happen in the second quarter. It did happen. That was for 25 gas turbines. And overall, we had orders for 42 gas turbines versus 25 last year. Thermal orders price was down 1%. Wind orders of $600 million were up 7%, so positive wind orders are good. We had orders for 248 wind turbines, up 32 from last year, and the wind orders price was down about 8. We had a mixed orders in the rest of the business. Aero equipment orders of $150 million were down 40%, but Jenbacher equipment orders of $180 million were up 93%. So you're seeing a mix around the world. Service orders were flat at $4.3 billion, and energy services at $3.2 billion were up 6%, including over $200 million of smart grid orders, which was up 50%. The one drag here is nuclear service orders. We had about $400 million of orders in the quarter, but they're down about 25%. Those fuel reloads have been lumpy, as I've said in the past. In the quarter on operations, revenue of $8 billion was down 8%, driven by the equipment being down 16%. And services up 5. We shipped 31 gas turbines versus 42 last year in the second quarter, and we shipped 511 wind turbines versus 680 last year in the second quarter. Segment profit, $1.7 billion was up 3%, as higher pricing and direct material deflation more than offset the impact of that lower volume. On oil and gas, Claudia Santiago and the oil and gas team also delivered another solid performance. They're seeing a pretty strong market. Orders of $2 billion were up 10%. They're up 14% ex-FX, driven by strong growth in equipment, which was up 20%. Services were down 3%, but they were up 1% ex-FX. Equipment's up, driven by a pickup in investment in the downstream market. We haven't seen this in a while. Refiners and petrochemical plants had really invested less during the oil price pullback in 2007 to 2009, and we're seeing a lot of increasing activity as oil prices have picked up. We saw particular strength in Kuwait and Colombia. And we saw two times the number of smaller projects globally. Drilling and production was also up broadly. We saw particular strength in drill stacks for use in offshore drilling ships slated for the Brazilian market. We had an order for a couple of ships, and we expect another 25 to 30 ships to be built over the next 2 to 3 years. And we also received another great order in the quarter for the Gorgon Australian LNG project. It was about $225 million. Service orders organically up 1%, driven mostly by lower orders for upgrades and parks in the downstream market, but the backlog in services is up 11% year over year. And in the quarter, in terms of operations, revenues of $1.8 billion were down 9%, driven by the lower reactor sales for refineries, but that was partially offset by the strong growth in drilling and production equipment revenues. And service revenues were down 6%, driven by the lower spare parts for refineries. Segment profit at $292, that was up 3% as our direct material deflation more than offset the lower volume. The final business pages on Home and Business Solutions, Charlene Begley and the team had another strong quarter. Look at revenues of $2.2 billion. They were up 4%. And segment profit, $143 million, was up 59%. Appliance orders were flat. We saw 4% growth in the retail market, but that was offset by the contract channel, which was down about 9%, given the weak multifamily market that's out there. Lighting orders were very strong, up 12%, driven by the growth in energy-efficient products. And we continue to invest in building ENERGY STAR qualifying appliances in the U.S., and we received $48 million of E-STAR credits in the quarter. That shows up in net income, not in the segment profit. Segment profit growth was driven by the benefits from the restructuring, and we also had positive deflation, which more than offset price declines. So overall, another solid quarter in H&BS. I'm going to wrap up with a chart on Europe. Basically, over the last 2 months, we fielded a lot of investor questions on Europe and tried to summarize them on the page. You know, will G capital losses increase if there's more economic turmoil in Europe? We do have a substantial business in Europe. Our businesses are profitable. They're performing well. You know, the net income was $183 million in the quarter on all our capital assets in Europe, up 79% from the first quarter. 80% of our assets are secured, so it's a majority commercial finance type business or mortgages. And the losses were down over 50% from last year, and they were down 20% from the first quarter. We hold less than $300 million of sovereign debt. We don't think that's going to have an impact on us. The second question that we got a lot, you know, will currency translation negatively impact earnings? We've got a pretty global manufacturing base, as we've talked about. It gives us a significant natural hedge. Foreign exchange hasn't been a big variable for us in the past. You know, it's been less than 1 cent a quarter. In Q2, we had less than $50 million impact from FX. It's actually positive. You know, we will be impacted by the euro as you translate the G capital assets and equity, but even with that, you saw our capital ratios improved. A couple macro questions. Could the austerity program slow the growth in Europe? Does a lower euro help European competitors? I think we'll have to see. You know, we have 14% of our industrial revenue in Europe, and we've already been basically dealing with a slow growth Europe. And we'll have to see what competitors do with the pricing. But, you know, as fast as we're worried about the dollar going to 1-to-1, now we're worried about it going the other way. So I think the global nature of the company and the broad manufacturing base we have helps us to kind of weather these short-term volatility periods. And based on what we see today, you know, I don't think European volatility should have a material impact on earnings. Now, Jeff and I were in Europe the week before last. We covered 7 countries. We met with many customers and government officials, bankers, and employees. So, Jeff, you know, maybe you could make a few comments on Europe before we go into the end here.
No, Keith, as Keith said, you know, we had a lot of chance to talk to people. I'd say while governments are adjusting, the companies and partners that we work with across Europe are all continuing to invest. A lot of them have export franchises, and so there just seems to be a little bit of a disconnect between what has to happen broadly from a macro standpoint and where the individual companies are that we are working with. So, as Keith said, we just don't see a big, a big systemic issue coming out of Europe, given the world we see today.
There seems to be a real a commitment to the European Union, a commitment to the euro, the austerity programs, you know, that people have put in place seem to be calming people down. So,
yeah.
You know,
and I think the market could show it.
Yeah, yeah. Good.
So I'm going to end just with 3 charts that I used at a May investor conference, EPG. The first one's on 2010. We really, you know, we really don't change this. It's similar to before. You know, I'd say our industrial businesses, as expected, NBCU is strengthening. GE Capital's quite good, and trending better. Healthcare looks pretty good. FX is negligible. And we expect to do more restructuring in the second half of the year to, kind of invest in the company so that we improve the long-term profitability of GE. And we've always expected to do that in 2010. So I'd say on a framework just similar to before. And the signs we've talked about are reasonably strong right now. The next page is another one that we went over with investors, and we used this chart again at the EPG. And in a no-guidance world, you know, we're just trying to say what are some of the pluses and minuses as we look out over the next few years. I really don't see any changes for this as we sit here today. There's lots of positive catalysts, lots of new products, global growth. GE Capital is clearly going to be better. The strength of our service business, and the company's always managing through a number of factors, product launches, regulation, pension expense, things like that. So, you know, we have positives and negatives, but as I weave through that, we're still positioned for attractive earnings growth in 2011, given, you know, with these same set of challenges and opportunities as we look out. And finally, you know, again, I showed this chart about a month or so ago, and we really don't have a change in that. You know, we're not giving guidance, but we still expect an attractive financial profile with a lot of cash. And if you think about value creation, the four things we talked about at my last investor meeting and what we saw in the second quarter, you know, we said that a repositioned GE Capital will have significant profit growth and competitive advantage. I think the second quarter shows that the GE Capital business model is intact. And I actually think when you look out in the future for GE Capital, we're competitively advantaged versus lots of other players out there. And we feel like this advantage is going to benefit investors as we look towards the second half of this year and into 11. Growing in our infrastructure business, you know, we had good orders. We're investing a lot in R&D. We've got a big global footprint. So, you know, we continue to invest in that that long cycle strength. Building expertise and value around process excellence. Our margins are good. Our cash flow from operating activities are good. Our risk management has held strong. So I think investors should feel good about that. And capital allocation opportunities to create long-term shareholder value. You know, I think as more things come into focus on GE Capital returning to earnings growth, financial regulatory reform, this just gives us tremendous flexibility from a cash standpoint in terms of where we invest and how we grow. So with that, Trevor, I'll turn it back to you, and we'll take some questions.
Thanks, Jeff, and thanks, Keith. Noelle, I think we're ready to jump into questions right now.